Book of Ephesians again, and chapter number 6. Now just mention that we'll cover, Lord willing, up to verse number 9 or 10 today, and then the ministry next week will finish Ephesians, and then we'll go back to a Bible reading format. And if it's okay, we'll perhaps look at the book of Acts together in Bible reading on Sundays, beginning in about 2 weeks, Lord willing. So Ephesians chapter 6 and verse number 1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, and singleness of your heart as unto Christ, not with eye service as men pleasers, but as servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as to the Lord, and not to men, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free. And ye masters, do the same things unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there respect of persons with him. God will bless his word. This is the end of the section we were considering last week together, beginning with husbands and wives, and then parents and children, and then employees and employers. Now, of course, in this day, these people were bond slaves. Some of you may think that you are a bond slave to your boss, but obviously conditions are much different. But principles are still here, which can be very helpful. Now, a number of questions that we will have to address as we look at this together. And let me just maybe, if I can, just to prime the pump, have you think of a number of questions. Number one, how long as a child do I obey my parents? Children, obey your parents. Is that lifelong, or when does that end? Is the promise that we have in verse 3, that if I do honor my parents, that I'll live long, is that promise really valid? Can I really get, you know, can I really bank on that promise that I'll live to be 90 or 100 if I honor my parents? Very, very important verse 4. Why does the Spirit of God always address fathers when he talks about the raising of children? I mean, we all know, all of us know, and the Bible's pattern is that it is the mother who raises the children. And yet, whenever the Word of God speaks about the responsibility of raising children, it says fathers. So we have to ask ourselves and answer that question, why does it address fathers? And not even, doesn't say parents, it doesn't say fathers and mothers, doesn't say mothers, it says fathers. How does a father provoke his children? We have in verse number 4. Now, this is not, please don't raise your hand, some of you young people here, how your fathers provoke you, okay? You could probably answer, don't want you to do that. But my responsibility is to answer, what does it mean, fathers, provoke not your children to wrath? And then in verse number 5, are there limits to how far an employee goes in obeying his master, his boss? Or do you just obey him? No matter what he tells you do it. Whether it's cheating, lying, stealing, you obey your boss because he's your boss. Are there limits to obedience? When you come to verse number 6, it tells us that these servants are doing the will of God. So what is the will of God that they're doing in verse number 6? And then what does verse number 9 mean when it tells masters you have a master and there's no respect of persons with him? So a lot of questions that would prime the pump as you consider together some of these statements that are in here. So children, subject yourself. Fathers, restrain yourselves. So he begins in verses 1 to 3 with instructions to children and parents, and first with children again. The word here for children, obey, is a different word than the word used for wives, submit. We mentioned that when it comes to wives submitting, it's a willing ranking of myself, taking a place willingly and intelligently, allowing someone else to be the leader, to be head. But the word here for children, obey, carries the idea of listening. Listen to what you're told and do what you're told. So it's a much, much stronger word. It's not the idea that I am ranking myself under someone, but it's rather the idea I'm listening to what they tell me, and I do what they tell me to do. So here we have children enjoined to obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Now, it may be that these were saved or Christian children being addressed, and saved parents, and I realize that there are differences here. Many individuals here do not have Christian parents. It is a tremendous burden for you. I know some of us have no idea of what it means to have parents who are not saved, and certainly we should have a very, very genuine care and sympathy for you in this. But I think the principle still is the same, that God expects children to obey their parents because He says, this is right, this is just. So how long does this go? Well, He addresses children. Not addressing adults here, He's addressing children. So children, while they are children, living in a family setting, are enjoined by the Spirit of God to give obedience, to hearken, to listen to their parents. But then in verse 2 is a whole different idea. Honor thy father and mother. So while verse 1 may end with adulthood, and really, if you think of it, any sensible parent does not give rules and orders to their adult children. And I mean, you may give them guidance, you may give them advice, you may tell them you're not happy with something, but they're not the same as when they're 5 and 6 and you're ordering their life and controlling them. They have to make decisions, they have to be independent, they have to unfortunately learn by mistakes. One of the most difficult things for parents, most difficult thing for me, is to watch your children make mistakes and to let it happen and let them feel the consequences of their mistakes. Hard to do. You want to shield, that paternal, especially a father, wanting to shield his children from hurt and harm and all. But verse 1, parents and their children when they're children. Verse 2, though, is something that is lifelong. It never ceases. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment. So in verse 2, we have a lifelong commitment to honor our parents. How that is played out, how that is actually displayed, will vary with need. It may involve financial need. It may involve caring for them. But whatever way it's required, we are called upon to honor, to respect, to give them the place they deserve as our parents. So honor thy father and mother. That is a lifelong requirement for us as believers, to give honor to them, to give them their due. Now we come then to this difficulty, this promise. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. Now the difficulty comes that there are individuals who have honored their parents who have died when they're young. So how do we understand this verse? Well, let me give you a couple of different suggestions, and then I'll give you my own understanding of it. Some have suggested it's a generality, as you have in many of the Proverbs, that are generalizations of how life works, that this is normally how life works, but that at times, sometimes young people do die. It's just a general statement. For example, in the Proverbs, in the Psalms, you have David saying, I have been young, now I'm old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken or his seed begging bread. And yet you come to the New Testament and you have a man like Lazarus who is begging bread. So obviously some righteous people did beg bread. So it's just a generalization. That's one way of looking at it. We're just looking at a general statement that normally people who are respectful to their parents live long. It could just be stressing for us the fact that this is so important that God put a promise with it. So not so much that the promise is for us, but just stressing that this commandment is so vital to God that actually He gave a promise associated with it, and He really gave no promises with any other commandment, if you think of it. This is the only commandment that really had a promise, that if you obey your parents, honor your father and mother, and thy days shall be long upon the earth, and so on. So maybe it's just stressing for us the fact this is such an important commandment that God actually gave us a promise to go with it. But let me suggest to you a different way of looking at it. Because if you go back to where it was given, here's what it says. Honor thy father and mother that thy days may be long on the earth, which the Lord thy God hath given thee. So what I'm going to suggest to you is this was not an individual commandment, or rather, not an individual promise to individuals, but it was a promise to the nation. That if in the family circle, obedience to parents and honoring of parents was learned, the nation would remain on the land all their existence. In other words, learning to honor and to respect authority in the home would then translate into the nation and would make the nation stable and would make the nation prosperous and would in turn make the nation respect God and His authority, and as a result they would remain in the land long. The result was the opposite. The result was they were carried away out of the land. So what I think we're learning in this promise is this, that stability for the nation of Israel depended upon what happened in the home. And I think we can translate that as well into assembly life. Stability in assembly life very, very frequently relates to what happens in our home lives. So he's stressing for us now the value. I remember that honor thy father and mother is the swing, if I can use that word, the swing commandment of the ten. You have commandments that are the first three commandments are directly related to God. Then you've got honoring your parents, and then you've got commandments relating to our dealings with each other, men. So that everything flows together. Honoring God, first of all, honoring parents next, and then learning to live with others. And if it doesn't occur, then there is havoc and disorder in society as well as in assembly life. Verse 4, ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Why are fathers mentioned first? This is very, very searching and very solemn. You may think I'm overdoing it, but it's not. It is because of the principle of headship, that a father is responsible for his home. And he is ultimately responsible for the way children are brought up. Can't say if my wife were only a little firmer with the children, if my wife only were a little more consistent, if my wife only knew how to... No. God says the man is responsible for what goes on in his home. And so he is given the charge here, as he is in Colossians and elsewhere. Fathers, the home is your responsibility. When I grew up, I haven't seen it for years, but growing up, I remember seeing in many Christians' homes, it isn't really a text, but everyone thought it was a text on the wall. Christ is the head of this home. Now, that's a nice sentiment, but it's not true. You are the head of your home. You can't pass that responsibility off to Christ. He is Lord in your home, but you're head. That means you're responsible, not Him. Remember, headship means responsibility for. So that the husband, the father, is responsible for a home. And so here he is reminding fathers they are responsible for the character of their home and for their children. And so he tells them not to provoke, not to incite them, not to frustrate them. Provoke not your children to anger, but to bring them up. That is the word for bringing up is the word for nourishing. And then there is the nurturing. And then there is the admonishing in the Lord. There are many, many ways that we as parents can provoke, frustrate our children. You can probably add to the long list, okay? Things such as favoritism, things such as negativity, always being negative, always pointing out what they do wrong, always maximizing their mistakes, their inadequacies. Never good enough, never measuring up to what we want, trying to make them something they're not. So negativity and berating them and favoritism and berating them publicly and putting them down, all of those things just totally squelch a child's spirit. I used to hear, and I've learned to disagree with it totally, used to hear about the need to break a child's will. We break animals. We teach a child the wisdom of submitting their will to someone else. We don't break their wills. We teach them the wisdom and the value of submitting their wills to others. And so a father here has this tremendous responsibility of nourishing, bringing them up, of nurturing. The idea of nurturing is to discipline and train. And the admonition is the idea of speaking to their mind, of internalizing conscience, of teaching them values that are going to be vital for them in their life for the future. Three great responsibilities of a father in a home, as I would see it. To guard the home, to guide the home, and to grace the home. He guards the home in the sense that he determines what comes into that house and what doesn't come in. Now, we live in a day of tremendous technology and a day of the availability of things that were not available when most of us were growing up, so it's a different world that I'm speaking to, and I realize that. But still, even with that limited knowledge I know of what's available out there today, still, it is a father's responsibility to guard the home. What comes in? What his children are going to be exposed to? Who comes in? And how things come in? And all the rest that goes with that. The guarding of the home, the establishing of boundaries for that home is vital. Everyone in life needs boundaries. They're vital to security, vital to development. So a father, number one, he guards the home. He's responsible for it. And I'll have to leave that to you and your own conscience relative to internet and all that's available and other forms of media, other forms of entertainment. Those are all things you have to decide in the presence of God as to your family and their preservation and your goals for their life. So he is to guard the home. He is to guide the home as well. He is to help establish its convictions and its control. And he is to seek to, in every way he can, to guide it in the right direction, giving prominence to the Word of God, giving prominence to the spiritual part of life, being at meetings and bringing the children to meetings as much as possible. He's guiding the home in the direction it ought to go and the direction he feels that the Lord would have it to go. So he guides it. But maybe the most important is that he graces the home by his very life. David's sons never went wrong until David went wrong. That's searching. David's sons never went wrong till David went wrong. David's example threw the family into total disarray and disaster. How does a father grace the home? Mainly by his character. Mainly by his character and his consistency. You know, children are very quick to pick up if I'm one thing when I'm around the Christians, but I'm something else at home. If I, you know, say nice things and I act really nice when I'm with the Christians, but at home I'm a bear. And, you know, nobody can live with me and the kids are in fear of me. And that doesn't grace a home. That inconsistency begins to tell the children that you're just a hypocrite and, you know, this isn't a real thing. So gracing the home by a consistent, godly character is vital as far as the responsibility of a father in guarding, guiding, and in gracing a home for God. Now, have to just leave that. He comes then to servants and their masters, and I've used just simply the word employees and employers. And again, he begins with the one in the place of submission, the place of a lesser role, the servant, and then moves to the master. Now again, as we said, these were slaves, which is, while on the one hand you may say, well, then it can't apply to me. Well, it does in this sense. If this was true of slaves that had no rights whatsoever, then it is even more true of those who can do this voluntarily. So notice what he says now to servants. They are to be obedient to their masters according to the flesh. Now that's helpful to remember. They're only your boss. They're only able to control your body. Masters according to the flesh. With fear and trembling and singleness of heart, but you're really doing it to Christ, not with eye service. The idea there is not just doing it when the boss is looking, not just doing it when you're under observation, but really you're serving the Lord who's always looking. He's always aware of what you're doing. Doing the will of God from the heart with goodwill, doing service as to the Lord. So I'm really serving the Lord, not men, and so on. So just look at some of these things individually. Here's an attitude that I should foster as an employee. Serving in singleness of heart as to the Lord. Now you may find that difficult with the company you work for that seems nameless and faceless and ruthless, and you know, you're just a big number, and when the, you know, when the crunch comes, you lost your job, and you know, you feel like, how can I serve a company like that with singleness of heart? Well, remember, you're serving the Lord. And singleness of heart is unto the Lord. Not only an attitude to foster, but here's an ambition to have, pleasing the Lord. Doing service as to the Lord and not to men. So, really being conscious that really, in my job, I may not please my boss, but if I do my job to the very best of my ability, I'm really pleasing the Lord, and that's really what matters. Accomplishing the will of God from the heart. What was the will of God for these slaves? It wasn't preaching the gospel. It wasn't seeing all their fellow slaves saved. The will of God for these slaves was just doing the day-to-day work that was assigned to them to do. The tremendous thing about Christianity, or I shouldn't say the tremendous, one of the tremendous things about Christianity is it has lifted the day-to-day from the routine and the seemingly meaningless to where really, whatever you're doing, you can do it as to the Lord. You can actually do your daily job as though you're serving the Lord. And you've lifted it out of the humdrum and the meaningless and the routine into something that really is service for God. Because the will of God is for you to do your job to the very best of your ability, to serve faithfully and to serve Him. So whether you're turning hamburgers at McDonald's or whether you're doing tremendous things, whatever it is, to do it conscious that if I do what I am doing well, I can actually please the Lord and actually honor Him in what I am doing. Here were men who were serving as slaves. Slaves without even names. Slave number one, slave number two, slave number three. And as they slaved away, their master didn't appreciate what they were doing. The boss didn't appreciate it. The foreman wouldn't appreciate it. Over those slaves would be another slave who would be kind of the foreman, and all he cared about was making sure they got the job done, because he had to answer to his master. But here he says, just doing the will of God day by day, serving as you're supposed to, with singleness of heart, not with eye service, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether bond or free. Imagine that the Spirit of God actually puts a reward, puts an eternal reward on your day-to-day work, if it's done according to the principles of these verses that we've been looking at. That knowing that whatever good thing anyone does, whoever he is, bond, slave, or free, doesn't matter, whether you're a slave or whether you're not a slave, the same shall he receive of the Lord in a coming day. So tremendous to think of how God has taken day-to-day labor and invested it with tremendous potential to bring Him pleasure and to receive a well done from His hand. 5 minutes then. Servants, be faithful. Masters, be fair. So He tells masters or bosses, so that, just step back a moment. Just think of the assembly, and again, issues whether this was a circular letter to a lot of assemblies or just to the assembly at Ephesus. Whatever assembly got this, there were people in the assembly who were slaves, and there were people in the assembly who were masters. All sitting down together in the same assembly. So you can imagine the differences. Here were rich masters, here were poor slaves, and they're all part of the same group, who are meeting to remember the Lord and to carry out New Testament principles. So as Paul is addressing them, he's addressed the slaves. And you can imagine, couldn't you? I mean, just put yourself back in this day for just a minute. Imagine the masters sitting there, the bosses. Give it to them, Paul. Go ahead. Tell them what to do. Make sure they really do what they're supposed to do, and make sure they, you know, some of these guys are getting pretty slack and they think because we're all Christians they can get away with it. Make sure you tell them what to do. And suddenly Paul says, now, masters. Ooh, wait a minute. Yeah, masters. Masters, make sure you do the same things to them. Now, what he means by do the same things to them may be open to a little bit of difference, but I would take it what he is saying is, make sure you treat them on the basis of the same principles that they're serving you. They're serving you because they belong to Christ and they are really serving Him. Now you make sure you treat them fairly, without respect of persons. Make sure that you treat them with fairness. I would take it that he's especially mentioning that, or he has that in mind, because of how he ends the verse, no respect of persons with him. Don't think because you're a master, you have a right to abuse them. Don't think because you're the boss, you have a right to keep them down. Don't think because you're the boss, somehow you can be angry and get away. No, he says, make sure you treat them because in a right way, because God is no respecter of persons. So he reminds them here, number one, of fairness, the vital need for fairness. And he says to do it without threatening, so that it's not a matter. Now, I realize sometimes in business, bosses have to be firm, bosses have to be direct. But he says, make sure, you know, you're not marked by somebody who flies off the handle, someone marked by anger, by threatening his employees. If you don't do that, you're going to get the whip and so on. Make sure that you treat them with fairness. And then he says, secondly, remember there's an equality. It's not in our authorized version, so you have to let me read you maybe a little bit more of a critical translation of it. When you come to verse number 9, knowing that their master and yours is in heaven. Knowing that their master and your master is in heaven. In other words, you both have the same master. You both answer to the same master. You both answer to the same Lord. Don't think that you don't have anyone over you. No matter how, I hate to use the word high, no matter how responsible our position, there's always someone above us. And he says here, you men who think you are the final authority, remember there's an authority above you. And you will have to answer to that authority. And so he says, knowing that your master also is in heaven, and neither is there respect of persons with you. So there is fairness, there is forbearance, there is the fear of God, there is the consciousness of a master to whom I am accountable and to whom I must give an account of my stewardship, even as a master. So he has brought together in these verses for us principles that should affect us in our married lives, in our family life, in our business life, in our employment, all of those areas. We mentioned at the beginning that what he has done is he has reminded us of a standard. The standard in marriage for a husband is to love as Christ loved, and for a wife is to be submissive as the church is subject to Christ. In parenting, as a father, my fatherhood should be like his fatherhood to me. How he has treated me as a son, as a child, that father has treated me is the way I should treat my children as well. And children are to obey their parents in the Lord. And now when it comes to employment, slaves, you are really serving Christ. And masters, remember you have a master. How does your master treat you? How does your master treat you? Is he fair? Is he kind? Is he honest? He says, remember, that's how you, as a master, should treat others. So that really, what you have here is, these aren't just arbitrary rules that make for a nice society. These are not just suggestions by the Apostle Paul for how we can live nicely in marriage, how we can raise our families well, or how we can get along in our employment. What he's saying is, everything we do takes character from who God is and what Christ has done. It should permeate every relationship. It should control every relationship here upon earth. And so we have looked hurriedly then at these, and in the will of God, then finishing the chapter in the next week. And then, as I mentioned, perhaps moving on to the book of Acts back in a Bible reading format for the next several months. So with that before us, we'll just ask God's blessing and close.